or near enough. Sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together as we think we got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Flat Nickel Podcast. I am your host, Hannah Nawa. Today's episode is with Scott Lowe. We hopped on the phone with Scott a couple of weeks ago to discuss all of his current projects, including his album that came out a little while ago, and also his project that he's been working on at his homestead. It's a really fun interview, and I'm going to keep this intro short and sweet so that you guys can enjoy this episode. Without further ado, here's our interview with Scott Lowe. So I'm super excited to be talking with you. I haven't seen you in quite a while. You, for our listeners at home, we should know that you came and played at my venue, The Thought Lot, Hop, Skip, and a Jump a while. And and now you are releasing new music. You just released new music.
I just put out a new record June 15th.
Yes, I listened to it. I don't know why I thought it was forthcoming.
it's officially out and everything.
So one of the things that I wanted to start off by saying is I of course did a little bit of research on you, as I do for my interviews. And one of the things that I saw was that No Depression called your music too country for folk and too folk for country. How do you describe your music? What would you describe your music as being?
I think they were talking, that No Depression quote was about my last record, which was definitely a lot more country. Mm-hmm. And this new record is definitely a lot more folk, because I didn't really like being called a country singer, because mm-hmm. that's weird to me. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of racism and sexism in country music, and I decided that I would rather stand for something instead of just letting people call me a country singer. I wanted to I made a folk record with some messages and viewpoints and things that I think I needed to say.
I feel like a lot of times we hear artists that, you know, maybe would be considered country, or they generally want to sort of stay away from that label because there are some negative connotations with the genre of country music. But do you feel like, you know, genres are at all limiting as a songwriter? Do you feel like do you view yourself as a folk artist, or do you just kind of make music as it comes to you? And
yeah, I think it's probably more like I've gone through so many phases as a musician. I can't say that I'm just one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've played in jazz and hip hop bands and all kinds of stuff, and I think that I'm making folk music mm-hmm. now, and I don't think that's going to change very soon. But I definitely think that, I mean, I listen to everything. Like, I listen to all kinds of music all the time. I've got an 11-year-old boy who wants to listen to all kinds of music that I would never find, mm-hmm. like pop and Post Malone and all this new stuff that's wrecking people. But I think, I don't know, I've been doing this so long that, like, I don't even really think about what genre I am anymore. Like, I definitely wanted to make a folk record because I kind of wanted to, like, get back to Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan. And, like, there's all, I mean, everything from, like, you know, the NFL kneeling from the national anthem to, you know, musicians speaking their mind and people saying, you know, athletes and musicians should just stick to their trade or whatever. It's like, all these things are passion-based arts, really, you know, and, like, you got to write what you believe in, I feel like, and I think Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan are the forefathers of folk music, American folk music, for a reason. And so I decided to write a record about us, not just me.
Do you consider this album to be a protest album?
No.
No?
No, I think it's more of a unification album when it comes down to it. Mm-hmm. I think it's more about bringing us all together and us trying to find a way to all be happy, because happy people make a lot better living conditions.
Do you feel at all a sense of pressure or responsibility in writing about these topics that can, because I think about, you know, when you do write a song about the current climate in this country and all over, that it can go, I don't know, like south so quickly, or it can become aggressive. And like you said, this is a unification album. Do you feel any sort of responsibility?
I understand what you're saying. I think it can be bad. Like, mm-hmm. the protest record, and like, you don't want to turn people off. And that's why I think I didn't write a protest record mm-hmm. so much as I wrote a record. Because even like songs on the new record, like Burning Tires, Smoking Guns, and These Bones, and the songs that are really topical are more about, you know, they're more hopeful, and they're more mm-hmm. like, this is how it can be. This is, you know, it doesn't have to be about Republican and Democrat. It's really just about being happy and getting a fair shake and, like, treating your fellow man all right. And, I mean, I don't remember the question, so next.
Do you use songwriting as kind of a way to process, you know, what you see on the news or what you see on social media?
I think with this record, I had already processed it all. Mm-hmm. I had already figured out what I wanted to say. Like, I usually when I go into a record, at least the past couple, I've really, like, worked on these songs and knew what I wanted to say before I let them go. Before I recorded them or set them free. I don't think it's so much processing. I think it's more of trying to figure out how to convey it in a way that's not too obvious. It makes you think a little bit. That's really what my mission here was, like, lay out some topics and let's lay out how the future could look and how the future hopefully won't look. So I don't think it was, I came with a lot of intent with this record mm-hmm. more so than processing. I think I did the processing as I worked into writing it. You know, I figured out what I wanted to say and then wrote the song pretty much.
When did you start working on this album? How long has it sort of been start to finish?
I would say, you know, some of these songs I started writing before, like, it's been 2 years between records, so I would say it took every bit of those 2 years, you know, writing songs and touring them and working on them and before I really laid them down. There was a couple songs that didn't get much, like, tour miles on them, but for the most part, a lot of these songs I really, really worked out.
One thing that I picked up on, Scott, is, and it was at the beginning of the interview, and I'm sorry to come back to it so late, but you said that being called a country musician sounded weird to you. Did that strictly just come with the statement that you made after about it having, you know, country music sort of having an association with racism and sexism in the eyes of some people? I don't want to speak for everybody
part
listening.
That, and part also, like, I'm not a country singer. Like, I just don't fit the bill. I'm only 5'7". I don't wear big hats. And I mean, I definitely am from the country and definitely, I don't know. It just wasn't me. I've always considered myself a songwriter and a guitar player, not really a performer. Like, performer's like third to me. Like, I feel like I've always, because I mean, for the longest time, that's all I did was play guitar. So I think, like, I think it was, it's just like, you know, me being, it was just a wrong label, I felt like, too. Like, I'm a country boy, but I'm not.
A country boy, but not a country artist.
Yeah.
Do you, you moved from Athens to where you're at now in northern Georgia. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about what the music scene is like in Athens? Because I know Athens does have a music scene. I've never been, and I'm curious.
Oh, yeah. Athens, you know, it's... I have to be very delicate here. I love Athens, and I would not trade my time there. I would not trade my, like, time that I spent and learned there. Athens is a big town with a big college. You know, the college is half of its residents. And, you know, there's, you know, under 200,000 people. Half of them are college kids. They usually don't really know a lot about good music. And then the rest are towny local folks. And so, you know, there's 400 bands that are from Athens at any given point, I feel like. You know, there's a lot of supply, and the demand is so-so. Mm-hmm. I think it used to be better. I also used to think arts and music used to be a lot more of a forefront in Athens, and now football and college and all that is taking over. I think there is a lot of great creativity and great music still coming out of Athens.
Has your songwriting... You know, oh, go ahead.
There's a lot of every kind of music, you know, but there's definitely, like, the Athens, like, indie rock sound that is more prevalent now. I feel like for a long time, like, the 90s was a lot of jam bands and stuff, and it's kind of gone a little more indie rock, hipster rock. I mean, I definitely, you know, I played in 20 some different bands in that town and definitely learned how to play on stage and be in a band and lead a band. And now I just play solo for the most part. But, you know, Athens, like I say, it's a great town. There's so many stages. It's just getting people out on a consistent basis, and really, like, to be from Athens is great, but to be from Athens, you also means that you have to leave Athens a lot, and Athens has a very short memory. So it's hard.
Do you miss being in a band at all?
No. I mean, I still get to go play and with bands here and there, because, I mean, I'll go play lead guitar or steel or something with folks, fill in a couple times a month. I don't miss running my own band. Like, it was stressful, and it's like, especially a touring band, it's like there's so many moving pieces and so many, like, I just want to be a songwriter and also quit drinking. So, like, the whole allure of, like, being on the road rallying with my boys mm-hmm. for weeks on end, It's not as attractive anymore as it once was.
Do you feel more inspired, or, like, has your songwriting changed at all since moving out of Athens?
I don't know that I'm more inspired. I feel like I have a clear vision, a clear view, I feel like, way up here on the mountaintops. I think that I don't know. I haven't written very much music recently, but we've also had a baby, and just, I wanted to really let these songs on this new record, like, have some time to grow and get out there. And I didn't want to, like, overload myself with new songs. So I kind of put a moratorium on writing a little bit, but I also feel like I've been writing other stuff too. I've been writing, like, fly fishing articles, and so I feel like I'm inspired in different ways living up here, But I also kind of feel like it was intentional not to be writing songs for the past year, so.
Can I do a follow-up on choosing to write a fly fishing article? Was that, I mean, just a all-of-a-sudden passion project you chose to undertake, or have you wanted to write articles?
So, yeah, when I moved up to North Georgia, at the time, my future wife, her stepdad was the president of Trout Unlimited, which is like the fly fishing trout conservancy group nationwide. He was the president of like the local chapter, and he handed me a fly rod when I moved up here, you know, 5 years ago, and that was like right when I quit drinking, and I think I like kind of traded a whiskey bottle for a fly rod and started fishing my face off. And then we bought this property that we have now. It's called Hatch Camp and Art Farm. And we have like a little campground on a private trout stream. And I've started like doing fly fish guiding here and lessons and fly tying classes. And we also have a stage here. Like we've had folk music festivals here and Appalachian music fair last couple weekends ago. And so, yeah, this is definitely a passion project. Like, the whole fly fishing thing is totally, it's a very big part of my life now. And I talk about writing music and fly fishing, and people are like, we need to write a good fishing song. And I'm like, there is only one good fishing song, Fishing in the Dark. That's okay. The only song I can consider a decent fishing song.
You mentioned having festivals and live music on your property. Are you the one that organizes that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We had 14 different acts played 2 weekends ago, 2 days. I do all the booking and I do all the fly fish guiding and I do all the daddy daycare. What do you want, baby? More Cheerios?
Aww.
Hatch Camp is, you know, we just been here a year now, and we've already had three full-day festivals, and we do, like, house concerts kind of down on the stage in the camp where we have two or three songwriters play, like, every other weekend.
That's incredible. That's exactly, like, what we want to do as sort of the next step of the Thought Lot is just have like, a artist compound and...
right now we're just rustic camping, but eventually I hope we have like little cabins, like 6 to 8 little cabins or RVs or yurts, like weird lodging down there, and maybe like a, you know, an artist residency cabin. And yeah, I have big plans for this place, and we're just getting going.
That would be incredible. Now, is that just like a piece of land that you found like through a realtor? Was that in your family? Like, how did you?
No, it was totally through a realtor. It was totally on RE/MAX. It was not a campground before. It was just a private land. And it's like 8 acres actually 8 acres on 2 different sides of a road. So our house is on one side of the road, and then the whole campground is on the other side of the road along the creek. And it's awesome. Like, if y'all ever come down here, y'all got to come check it out. Because, I mean, there's a reason we have, like, more than, like, we only have 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook, and there's 100 of them.
Wow, that's incredible. So do you have, like, non-musicians, just you have people that come and camp on that ground?
Oh, yeah, we have, like, this weekend we're actually having a big birthday bash for my son out here with a ska band and, like field day. We're going to do like Hatch Camp field day for the kids with like 3-legged races and slip and slides and all kinds of stuff.
Is your son a ska fan?
What's that?
Is your son a ska fan?
Well, one of my buddies who has played my house concerts just solo, he has a ska band. It's kind of like reggae ska, but horns and everything. And my son, like, unbeknownst to me, my buddy was up here camping for the festival 2 weekends ago, and my son asked him if he would play his birthday party, and then my buddy rounded up his whole band. So we've awesome. Never actually had anything bigger than like drums, bass, and guitar out here.
Oh my gosh, that's gonna be so cool.
So, but his birthday last year was his 10th birthday. He actually had like hair to his waist, and we had a barber come out here and cut his hair. And then we had the first band ever to play out here at Hatch Camp was for his birthday last year. And that's actually the first of two times we've ever had a drum kit out here.
How?
So, yeah, it's pretty awesome. Hatch Camp is definitely like, that's probably another reason I haven't written very much music is because this place is like, keeps me busy.
No, that's an absolutely like amazing endeavor. That's mm-hmm. that's the dream, and there's a venue in a place up in New Hampshire that we were just at that's kind of similar. It's mm-hmm. they just transferred their old barn on their property. It like the house is from like the 1600s, and they just transferred their old barn into a creative writing poetry workshop room. And then they have venues there. They have a local cider on tap there. It's like it's honestly so small. But it's just, you know, this family wanted to do it, and she's a poet, and he does music festivals for a living, and they decided they were gonna have it at their house in New Hampshire. So it's incredible to hear that like other people are doing that of thing, and that it's that there's such there is an underground sort of artist.
Oh, yeah.
Group.
I mean, I honestly, if I could never play anywhere else but here again, I'd be fine. Like, music-wise, like, I love our stage. Our stage is, like, magic in it, I swear. Like, every time I play out there, it's, like, one of my favorite shows. But, I mean, I am biased. It is in my front yard. But at the same time, like, I've played hundreds and hundreds of stages, and this one feels really good.
Yeah.
So hopefully we're breeding some good mojo out here, you know?
Yeah, that's, was there sort of a reason that you guys decided to do that or to pursue this? Was there?
I mean, mama got pregnant, we were already married and everything, so it's legit. But, we were looking for a house, and, you know, I just turned 40, and I was, like, ready to, like, I'd been playing 200-plus shows a year for 8 years, and I was kind of ready to, like, tone it down a little bit and, like, find some other, not career, but some other way to surround my music with another form of income, and, like, we found this land, and as soon as I saw it, I immediately was like, private trout stream, campground. I mean, people pay crazy money to mm-hmm. go fishing on a private trout stream.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Like, I mean, my job is to sing songs and take people fishing.
It like, is the dream.
I couldn't have planned it any better. Like, I'm told I got a beautiful little one-year-old baby girl and an 11-year-old boy who's smart as a whip. And a beautiful wife, and, like, I honestly, like, though, I try not to leave this place. Like, you know, we've got music this weekend, 2 weekends from now. I mean, I definitely have shows. Like, I'm playing them, have a gig tomorrow night, and then I've got 3 gigs next weekend. But for the most part, I try to stay here and really get this place going. And it's been a lot of hard work. Like, I am always bruised and cut up, and I, like, tweaked my hand working on the tractor. This place did come with a sweet Kubota tractor, too. So, yeah.
One more question that I had that I just kind of popped into my head again earlier in the interview that I wanted to follow up on was, You said that you like to write songs kind of specifically about, you know, current events. You didn't say protest songs necessarily, but like, I guess rally songs was a better descriptor.
Like I said, kind of like more unification songs,
right?
Like, you know, the whole. I mean, they definitely say some shit, you know, but like.
Well, my question was more relating to, you know, When you do choose a topic that you want to write about, mentally, how do you break it down? Because I'm always interested in how an artist chooses to approach a subject. You know, how do you think about what to approach and what not? What needs to be talked about? What's too sensitive? You know, those kinds of things when you go into these types of songs.
I kind of think that I'm not going to write a song unless I think I have some kind of resolution or something. I don't know. I think a lot of these songs, like Burning Tires, the title track on the new record, is a lot of everyone loves it. And it's really like, you know, it's more of a song that's like pointing out like, hey, burning tires, smoking guns, oil in the ocean, like none of this shit's good. But like, we can be, you know, like it doesn't have to be this way. So I'm not really calling anyone out. I'm not protesting anything. I'm just kind of like giving you opportunity to change your perspective, I guess, on something, you know, there's so much waste. There's so much like hate. There's so much fear. There's so much, all this crazy shit that like, it doesn't have to be that way. Like it can be another way. And like, let's look at it from this point of view. So I don't think it's protest or I think it's me just trying to like, you know, give somebody a reason to look at something differently. So maybe we can approach things in a compassionate, empathetic way where we are trying to find happiness instead of trying to find fear and hate and greed and all this shit that makes the world crazy, you know?
I feel like that's an excellent place to wrap things up. Like that's a good sentiment to end on.
Good. I think so too. I try to. It was a very scattered interview for me at points
because
of baby, but hopefully we got some good stuff.
Real quick, just a few quick things. Where can people find you? Where can people find the new record?
The new record, the best place to get it is the 10-Foot Woody Records out of Columbia, South Carolina put it out. And their Bandcamp is the best place to buy it, but you can find it on Amazon, iTunes, Google, all that stuff. But I think that you can find me, Scott Lowe Songs is my handle on everything, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, scottlowesongs.com, Hatch Camp and Art Farm. We really just have the Facebook and Instagram, but they're both Hatch Camp and Art Farm. And we got, you know, like I say, I try to play out here more than anywhere, so if you want to come hang out with me, you're more than welcome, and I'll teach you how to fly fish.
Yes, definitely. I love that.
Hey there, guys. Sam coming to intro this next segment. This is going to be called Sam Interviews the World, and it's a little mini segment that we're putting into the show when it fits, when we have time, for some of our shorter interviews, to kind of talk to more than just musicians. You know, me being a journalist, it's kind of my passion to want to interview everybody all the time. So I took this opportunity to interview my best friend from Indiana. His name is Aaron Dodd, who is a sculptor. Short little segment, little talk about art, sculpture, and how to make a career out of it. Hope you guys enjoy it. The Flat Nickel Podcast, for the uninformed in the room,
me,
is a podcast that aims to tell independent stories from independent artists. And when we say artists, we generally mean musicians. But I have this hankering to interview more than just that. I want to interview everybody that we possibly can. So musicians will be the you know, the cornerstone. But these other interviews, you know, in the wild with other people are what I'm also trying to get, you know, interview other artists like yourself. For those who are listening at home, I'm joined by my friend Aaron Dodd.
Hello.
And he himself has always been quite the artist, but I'm an artist in the painting sense, I should say, or drawing sense. But I'm very interested to talk to you because you've moved on to sculpting, I guess. Sculpture would still be the proper way to say that.
Yeah, both work.
Anyways, so let's start with the basic question that I think everybody would get asked is, what drew you to art in the first place? Did you just have a natural affinity for being able to draw things well, or was it your choice for creative outlet? For me, it was music, you know? I was never an artist. I still draw stick figures.
That's still art.
But I chose music. So what led you to drawing?
or painting, whichever your passion was?
Well, it's kind of a cliche at this point. It's like, it's what every art student writes on their application, right? I've been drawing as long as I can remember, but that's absolutely true. It was, is like the first hobby that I really enjoyed as like a very small child. Was never one for going outside to play for a long time. So I started drawing at home as early as possible. And my dad, he was a huge supporter of it. Never wanted to force me to go outside of my comfort zone for a long time. So he encouraged me to stick with drawing. And it was something that I ended up practicing, you know, just nonstop. So by the time I was around other people often in school, people were telling me like, wow, you're good at drawing. And that just kind of furthered the thing of, you know, I want to keep doing it. People keep complimenting it. I want to keep getting better.
I've noticed following your art. Are you still active on Instagram under Art by Aaron Dodd? Or?
I am.
Okay.
You can still find me.
I honestly, when you post, I just see it and go, Aaron. I forget who's posting under what, because you have your personal profile as well.
I don't have a personal life, so it is all...
So you only do Art by Aaron Dodd?
It's only Art by Aaron Dodd.
Fair. But I've noticed your styles have varied throughout the years from cartoonish to you've done a couple of, I'd say, like... nature type pieces,
landscapes.
Landscapes, yeah. I remember you doing one of a. It was somebody smoking a pipe, and the smoke came out to take the shape of a bear, I believe.
Yeah, that's more of an illustration kind of practice. Like rendering a full image is different from what I usually like to do.
Artistically, what styles did you prefer when it came to drawing? You know, what did you think your specialty was in the field?
The books and the resources that I grew up with were very old school. They were all. My dad's old, you know, how to draw books and his books from college on figure drawing. So I always ended up striving for like capturing things in the most realistic way possible. That was what I really enjoyed for a long, long time. Like particularly getting people's faces correct in portraiture. There's something really satisfying about figuring out what it is about what you're looking at and being able to transfer that in very precise measurements and line weights and values on a piece of paper, and it looks the same. That was what I liked to do for a long, long time. But as I got older, particularly in the last like 5-6 years, that got kind of boring. I started thinking like, why bother drawing something that you can take a picture of? A photograph can do it better. Why would I strive for realism? So most recently, drawing has become a way of exaggerating in a sort of caricature or cartoonish way. Like, how can I make this idea bigger than life? Drawing is a good option for that.
So now you're here at IUPUI for an art for a sculpting degree. I think you dove into this a little bit last night when we were talking off mic. But what led to the transition from drawing to sculpting?
This is where I have to give props to the system in place at our art school at Heron. Your first year at Heron is like exploratory by pure default, right? You have to take, everyone takes the same courses. You take an introduction to 2D art, you take an introduction to three-dimensional art, among some other things, and my intro to 3D art was the hardest course I had ever taken, like by far, because it's purely based on how much you push yourself. I ended up pushing myself a lot freshman year because I was hungry from the get-go. I was like, I want to be famous. I want to be good at everything. So I pushed myself really hard, and I had a really great professor who supported me even though every project I turned in sucked. Like, do not be mistaken. Everything I made that year was garbage. But he sat me down at the end of the year, and I vividly remember this. We were sitting on a bench outside of the classroom, and he turns to me and he goes, "You're really close. Don't give up. You are about to hit a stride, and you need to stick with three-dimensional art some way, any way you want to. Just keep doing it." And then as he was saying that, another student walked by, and he called her out and went, "You! I've spoken to you, right?" And she's like, "Yeah." Caught off guard. He was like, "Did I give you good advice?" And she was like, "Yeah, you gave me great advice. It's why I'm my major now." And then she walked away and was like, "See, listen to me." And I did. And that next semester I ended up taking a sculpture course, and same deal. It was like the hardest thing I'd ever done. But by the end of it, I had figured out some things that I was naturally inclined and just kind of stemmed from there. So he was right. And now I'm waiting for like my moment where another student is sitting on the bench with him and I walk by and he's like, you! I'm like, yes, listen.
One thing that I'm kind of noticing is challenge and not, you know, getting bored of things.
Yeah.
Do you think it's just boredom with something being too basic, or do you think you will always, once you start to master something, move on to the next challenge?
That's a tough one.
That might be a loaded question, because I think, you know, what you can do with drawing versus the art of sculpting are probably two completely different levels of complicated.
They're different universes. They're, one of the things that really appeals to me about three-dimensional art is there are unlimited variables, right? There are more materials than I could possibly name to work with. There are, I mean, you introduce a fourth dimension, right? Not only can you see the thing as a point, as a line, as three dimensions, but you can also involve time in a way. The time that people spend experiencing your work or how long it lasts is another element that just like, it increases the possibilities exponentially in ways that like illustrating never could. Animation gets close. Animation is the closest thing to sculpture you can get drawing.
So now let's move on to sculpting and more the sense. Well, I guess just basic question. What's one misconception that you think people might have about sculpting?
I'm gonna cheat and name two big ones. So first is that the major misconception is that it's really hard, which is not to say that it's not difficult.
Yes, I feel like it's against what you were just talking about.
It is challenging, but only as challenging as you make it. You don't have to be an expert in anything to pick up sculpting. You can enjoy it as a hobby, as like a 5-minute practice at the end of every day. Because leading into the second point, sculpture, this is my working definition, right? This is my golden nugget.
Your thesis statement
that
when you write your master's?
I've been sanding and polishing for 3 years now. This perfect little nugget of what sculpture is to me. It is, at its heart, the addition or subtraction of material. And if you think about it, that breaks down basically everything you do in life. Everything you do, especially in fine arts, involves the addition or subtraction of material. Drawing could be redefined as a form of sculpture in two dimensions, if you think about adding lines and dimension that way. And removing material, obviously, like carving. Also, that involves things like photography, right? If you think of light as a material, you're capturing it and you're adding things and removing things.
Sort of sculpting the picture, sculpting
exactly.
The moment.
So sculpture is a lot of things. It's not just, you know, carving marble statues of David. It's not just, like, making mounds of clay. It can be anything you could think of. You could redefine as a sculpture in some way if you try hard enough. And think like an art student.
Fair. What material is your favorite to work with? Since as you put, you can sculpt using anything.
Right.
What would be your... I've noticed you've done a lot of woodworking.
Yep.
And I think that might have been your start.
Right. Well, it varies a lot. Every concept that I bring to the table is going to work better with some materials than others. And it might not be my favorite thing in the moment, but I learn to appreciate the qualities of whatever I'm working with. For instance, right now I'm working with plaster, and plaster is a really neat thing. It's very sensitive to this time basis, right? Because every moment that it is activated with water, it changes. So you have to learn to keep an eye on it and appreciate it at each stage. At certain points, it's much more malleable. At other points, it's more rigid. But woodworking is what got me into it for the most part, and it's still my favorite. Wood is this really mystical thing, right? Because like every generation you could think of going backwards has worked with wood in some way, from like, what, 77,000 BCE, whatever, to now. And it's great because it has this character, it develops over time, it's organic, so it's always changing. And it's rigid enough to hold its form, but soft enough to be able to be shaped with sharpened steel. So you could do anything you want with it if you just learn a couple basic rules.
One little, or I guess last bit to talk about on woodworking is, We actually almost did a project together last summer. Sort of. You did the work. I managed the Black Mile to the Surface.
Yeah. The pyrography.
I was interning with the syndicate in New York, and we just so happened, I was very fortunate to be there at the time that one of my favorite bands, Manchester Orchestra, was putting out their new album, Black Mile to the Surface. Mm-hmm. I got the chance to meet Andy Hole and shake his hand, and everybody, I think I got a little bit of crap from the internship for that, because I feel like they thought I was kind of fanboying out a little bit too much.
That seems like a perk of the job to
me. Well, I mean, but you're supposed to maintain a level of professionalism. And I think the thing is that there was only one other person there with me when I physically got to talk to him. So only they know how I handled the situation.
Right.
Everybody else only heard the aftermath, which was me going, this was so cool. I got to meet Andy Hull.
Right. And after the moment's different than like in the moment.
Whether or not he meant it, I shook his hand and all I said was, hey, man, I just want to let you know that I'm a huge fan of your lyrics. If I ever get the chance to interview you sometime, I'd love to just pick your brain on what like some of this stuff means. And he looked me dead in the eyes back and he said, hey, man, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's going to be what he says to literally everyone.
Yeah, probably. But you know what? It felt amazing.
That's great.
But I got some flack at the office because afterwards I was just like, yeah, let's go.
Andy's my best friend. Guys.
No. See, I actually, if she ever hears it, Caitlin at the office, I got them to record a liner for WSYC, the Shippensburg station. Mm-hmm. And Caitlin said, write whatever you would have somebody normally say for your station. Just don't write, I'm Sam Fritz and Manchester Orchestra is my best friend. Back to the Black Mile to the Surface point. Mm. One thing that I really like to do is pitch ideas that I can try and make money off of. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in this situation, I couldn't have made money off of it, but because it was an internship, I was just doing work that I thought would benefit the company.
Right.
But in the future, it would benefit me to be able to pitch these ideas and give these ideas out because eventually I could be doing it for a career. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people sometimes get this misconception from me of I care more about money than I actually do. I'm just at a point in my life where I just need to know I can make money off of it. I don't care how much. I just need to know that it is something that I can turn into a career.
I get that because I also need to know that I'll be able to eat.
That's what I'm trying to transition to is with sculpting, how are you turning this into not just a passion project?
Well, it takes a lot of work. So I imagine we go through a lot of the same processes in pitching ideas to people, right? So if you go and drive around a city, right, you'll see monuments and plaques and all kinds of little details in places that someone has made, right? And someone has proposed the idea to make and mm-hmm. sold probably a whole committee of people on. So right now that's what I'm doing. I'm aiming for a career as a public artist for the most part. So a lot of what I've learned now has been through a previous mentor of mine, Quincy Owens. He's like a local success story in Indianapolis. He is one of the hardest working people I've ever met. He came to give a talk at Heron and he said some things I really liked. So I said, hey, can I work with you and learn what you do? And he said, absolutely. And then he gave me money, which was a bonus. So he's taught me a little bit about how to approach public art projects and how to pitch ideas, because there are always opportunities, right? People are always looking to commission some kind of work from an artist if you look for them. And one of the major things that I've learned is that I can't specialize too much, right? I have to keep practicing my other disciplines because I make a decent amount of money illustrating and painting and doing all these side jobs. That's what I think of them as now, side jobs to like promote the sculpting. Mm-hmm. But it's really difficult because I have to, there's this never-ending process of finding those things to apply for. And most of the time, it's a lot of rejection. It's like 3 no's for every 1 yes, at least.
I feel like 1/4 actually is pretty good.
It sounds pretty good.
If those are the stats you're giving me.
That's maybe optimistic of me. It's probably like 30 no's. It's not particularly easy, but there are opportunities to make money off of it.
Would you say the mentality of, because I, one thing I heard you say there is that you're going and searching for the opportunities.
Right.
Whereas if you want, you know, me being from outside the industry, what Hollywood has taught me is no, artists want to make their art and have people find them. Do you think that is something that your, the artistic community here has a grasp on of, like, you have to go find your work?
Well, that's, I mean, doing what you want and having someone find you is literally every artist's dream, right? Mm-hmm. Every artist would much prefer to work in their studio all day and have someone just show up and go, I love it, I'll buy it. That's not how it goes, though. Unless you're, you know, unless you've made it and you're published and you are in every fine art gallery in New York City, no one's just going to buy whatever you make. People maybe a little bit younger than me sometimes haven't quite found that out yet. A lot of people are very idealistic when they start a career in the arts, that I love this thing and this is all that I'm going to make and someone will eventually appreciate it. It's very difficult to do. You have to learn what it is about your practice that other people understand and appreciate and maybe work on that more than the very private aspects. I think that it's something people come to realize more and more, but there are people who are much more business minded than creative types. Not that there's not an overlap there, but the like stereotypical creative is maybe not so much concerned with how much other people like their work. It's kind of a shame.
Anything that you would like to promote as far as a way to maybe get yourself out there more as an artist, be it social media or projects you have going on?
Yeah. If you happen to be passing through Indianapolis in the next few months, you can catch my first public art commission at the Irvington Public Library. It'll be a very nice bench that you can sit on and admire. If you are not local, or even if you are, you can catch me on Instagram. It's where I update most projects, at Art by Aaron Dodd.
All right, guys, that does it for this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in again next week. We post every single Wednesday. We are available on iTunes, Podomatic, and Google Play Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Follow us on Facebook at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Make sure to drop us a like, a favorite, a subscribe, a five-star review wherever you're listening, and we will be sure to get another episode out to you guys next week.